From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Everything old is new again if you bring the right stuff to it. Adele knows it. Amy Winehouse knew it. Rafael Sadiq, behind me right here, helped make it so. When the world was going hip-hop, he pioneered toward neo-soul with Tony, 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 brought a new sound and sensibility to the bones of Motown, to R&B, to gospel-delic. He's a time traveler, backward and forward. Now, Time Magazine calls him one of the most influential people on the planet. This hour on Point, Rafael Sadiq. You can join the conversation. Where does Rafael Sadiq, his sound, his sensibility, take you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Heart Attack behind us right there from his 2011 album, Stone Rollin'. Rafael Sadiq joins us from Burbank, California. He grew up in Oakland, toured early with Prince, formed Tony, Tony, Tony with a half-brother and cousin in the 80s. He's produced Joss Stone, Earth, Wind & Fire, The Roots, Mary J. Blige, and many more. Came out in 2008 with his Motown-inspired album, The Way I See It. Last year with Stone Rollin'. A Grammy Award-winning winner for his song Love of My Life with Erykah Badu. He was just named one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world. Rafael Sadiq, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you here.
Hi, Tom.
Thanks so much for joining us. You were at the big Time Magazine bash this week, I think Tuesday night, with Stephen Colbert and the whole of the gang. What did it feel like to be? What does it feel like with the 100 most influential people in the world all in one room in New York?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. You know, it was a lot of cool. Steve Colbert had a lot of jokes about the 100 that was there and the other 100 that couldn't be there. It was a fun time. Everybody's really cool. Everybody had a really good time, and it felt good to be in the house and, you know, walk past some, you know, Harvey Weinstein and some of the big players and some people that, you know, we didn't know, that we all got a chance to meet each other and talk about different things around the world. So it was great.
That's pretty amazing. There you are with Hillary Clinton and Jeremy Lin and and right on down the line. Kind of incredible. Stephen Colbert standing up halfway through, reported saying here and saying, "We are better than the other people." Everybody laughing, of course. But it's such a relief, he said midway through your 100 most influential bash, such a relief to be away from the riffraff who didn't make the list, like the Pope and Oprah.
Yeah, that was funny.
Hey, what did you think when your face showed up in this great big list of, I mean, and your full page here in Time Magazine, most influential in the world, 100 most out of whatever, 6-7 billion, wherever we are now. What did you think when you saw that?
You know, at first, you know, I mean, I kind of like downplayed it. I didn't want to be too excited around people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, later on, when I saw two pages, I kind of got excited, you know. I was like, wow, maybe it's a dream or something. But once I got to New York, you really feel it once you get to New York and you play in that building where all the greatest jazz musicians play.
Yeah.
And you see Cicely Tyson, and you walk past all these people, and you meet everybody from Time, and then they actually give you this pendant that they put on your suit, and it says, "You're one of the 100," and then it kind of hits you. It almost hits you even more when you walk out when it's all over with. I think I have the after effect of getting knocked out once I got, you know, back to the hotel.
I bet. Sounds like the Wizard of Oz, you know, pinning the heart on there. Rafael Sadiq, my guest, along there with Christine Lagarde and, you know, Marco Rubio and Hillary Clinton and Warren Buffett, Rihanna, Adele, 100 most influential people in the world. I want to ask you about, I mean, Elton John wrote your blurb in there, and let's hang off a second before we look at what he had to say about it and let our listeners hear a little bit more of what you've been up to lately. I was dipping into Stone Rollin', which came out last year, and I really love this track. It's called Daydreams. Let's just listen. You can tell us about it. Here's Rafael Sadiq's Daydreams.
Have you ever wanted to buy someone you love something, but you couldn't afford it? But you just bought it anyway. You know how that go. Yes, I'm living on daydreams. Don't buy me something I can't afford.
Cause I'm living on bad dreams. Gonna buy me something I can't afford. Uh-huh. When the price ain't right and everything ain't looking right, but you still want it all. Uh-huh.
Daydreams from Rafael Sadiq's 2011 album Stone Rollin'. Rafael, you're our expert here. Take this apart for us, because we can hear something that sounds very familiar and old there, kind of a Dixieland rag, some country and soul all at once, but yet there's something new about it. Help us understand what you're doing there. What is this sound?
Yeah, I think it's a grassroots of it comes from like from Ray Charles. I'm a huge Ray Charles fan because my name is actually Charles Ray.
Yes, Stone Rollin', so, Charles Ray, everything backwards.
Charles Ray. So I grew up listening to Ray Charles and a lot of Nashville, you know, watching Hee Haw when I was a kid. So I kind of know all about that music and, you know, it has a banjo type feel where you could just sit there and just clap your hands and pat your leg. And I kind of wanted to bring that flavor to this record. I kind of want to give everybody something. And I love country music, country and western music. So I think that's the base, the basics of it. And every time I go to Nashville, I leave with a new guitar. So.
There's the back part, but I read you quoted somewhere once saying, Rafael Sadiq saying, I want to be a throwback artist, but with a futuristic twist.
Yeah,
and we can hear
yeah.
both going on right there. We hear the history at play there, but you're making it somehow very contemporary. How do you do that? What's going on?
I think it's the subject matter also, you know, because I'm talking about a lot of things that people mm-hmm. do, you know. It's like people buy things they can't afford, and right now with the economy the way it is, this song is very very true, and that sort of pulls it into the future. And also the drums, the rhythm, sonically, how I recorded it, how it sounds. Somebody in today's generation could actually listen to it, as well as, you know, the baby boomers and everyone else.
Robert Randolph playing some great steel guitar on there.
I kidnapped Robert Randolph for this record. So, like, I followed him for, like, 5 years. I was like, man, I'm gonna get you on the record, man, and I found him. You know, Robert stays on tour, and he flew out before he went on tour, and we did like 2 songs and Daydreams. We had a good time.
It's great. We're going to hear a lot more, but roll back the tape with us for a second to when you first got national prominence. I mean, you were out touring with Prince in his Parade days, but here you would come up out of Oakland, and I think with what a half brother Dwayne and your Dwayne Wiggins and your cousin Timothy Christian, you guys became Tony. Let's just bring back a little of that sound. This is a big hit from Tony, 80s and 90s. But this was It Never Rains in Southern California from the Revival, 1990. Tony, top hit.
And squeezing, hugging, girl, you know the rest, 'cause they tell me it never rains in Southern California.
Tony, 1990 there with It Never Rains in Southern California, Rafael Sadiq. Right in the middle of it. Now, I know this is way deep in your closet. You've done a lot since then, and we're going to hear it. But tell us what beam you got on here and how with Tony.
Well, you know, like I said, I grew up listening to a lot of different music, a lot of R&B, and at that point, you know, I didn't even think I could. It was hard for me to sing songs because I played for so many other people and backed up as a bass player. Mm-hmm. So I felt like in this group we needed a slow song, and we didn't make good slow music. And I called the late great Claire Fisher, a string arranger, to make me sound lush, and he did the job for me.
I guess he
and,
did.
And the group, we were together since like high school. My Tim Riley and my brother Dwayne is somebody I always wanted to be in a group with. We were in different bands growing up. It was all about bands in our neighborhood. There's tons of garage bands all over Oakland, and we got together and formed a band. And then right in the middle of it, Sheila E. and Prince had an audition in San Francisco at SIR, and I got the gig. And then I went back and grabbed Tim Riley, which is like really a friend, but he became a cousin. You know, we do that a lot. And then a friend of mine, Carl Wheeler, a keyboard player, I grabbed both of them, and we played with Sheila and Prince. And next thing I know, we were in Tokyo in a stadium singing Erotic City with Prince, and you know, Prince walked up to us and said, walked up to me and said, "How you doing? I'm Prince."
that's a pretty good flight out of Oakland to Tokyo and Prince. But why were you doing this instead of hip-hop? When the world, I mean, hip-hop was, you know, rap was really gearing up then. What took you in this direction instead of that? Was it very conscious?
Well, see, I grew up playing Oakland, like quartets, like the Five Blind Boys type of music, and the Mighty Clouds of Joy, and the Gospel Hummingbirds. And my mentor was a guy named Roy Tyler, in a group called Roy Tyler and the New Generation. And he was my mentor, and it was all about quartet gospel music. And, you know, music like, you know, Otis Redding and soul music and the Mamas and the Papas and all this San Francisco hippie music. So I had this mesh of all this music, and I loved hip-hop because hip-hop sampled music that was from the past. So I was like, somebody in hip-hop really loves, you know, old classic soul music. So that's why it was easy for me to keep doing what I do, you know, playing my guitars, playing bass and drums, because I felt like, you know, I was only trying to be like the people before me, like Sly, Grand Central Station.
And right on down. Raphael, stand by. We got to take a short break right here. This is Go to Hell off Stone Roland from last year. Raphael Sadiq is with us. 800-423-8255 is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Well, there's nothing you can do. Well, there's nothing you can say. Cause everything just ain't gonna go your way. If you're feeling kind of strange and you wanna lay it down, and it's hard for you to keep your feet on solid ground, you gotta keep. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Raphael Sadiq, Grammy Award winning singer, songwriter, multi instrumentalist, producer. A big influencer in music who makes the old, new, and hip again. Behind us right here, Keep Marching, off his 2008 album, The Way I See It. It is, we read, on the Spotify mixtape for President Obama's re-election campaign right now, alongside the Zac Brown Band and Jennifer Hudson and Wilco and Sugarland and Arcade Fire. Raphael Sadiq on the Spotify list there. You can join the conversation this hour. Are you, have you, followed Raphael Sadiq from his old Prince days to Tony, 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 to his reinventions in Motown and R&B? Did you see him in Time Magazine this week as world's most influential, alongside Rihanna and Adele and Hillary Clinton and you name it? And is Elton John right, writing up his blurb there? Does Raphael Sadiq prove that great black music is alive and well and not, as Elton John says anyway, just a string of hip-hop monotony? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Raphael Sadiq joins us from Burbank, California. Raphael, I wanted to ask you about that. Elton John here, I mean, he's complimenting you up and down, but I don't know where it leaves you, you know, with the community here, where he says he's happy to have your great black music alive and not just a string of hip-hop monotony. You see hip-hop as a string of monotony, Raphael?
Well, everybody has their opinion. I guess, I don't know. I mean, Elton's he's a musician's musician, and there's probably other musicians that from that generation that feel the same way. But I happen to grow up around, you know, a lot of different hip hop musicians as they actually are musicians too. But I feel like a lot of hip hop brought the early, you know, like New York hip hop. Brought a lot of great records back and a lot of great samples that made a lot of artists a lot of money. So, I mean, they also helped out a lot of people. But it pays to be a musician, though, because you can do a lot of things with that.
You've produced a lot of hip-hop artists. Remind us of some.
I've done stuff with Tribe Called Quest. I've done stuff with Snoop Dogg, DJ Quick, The Roots, Nas, just a couple, yeah.
So what are they going to say when they read Elton John saying you're getting off the hip-hop monotony here?
I don't know, man. Maybe they'll go look for Elton.
Yeah, right. Look for Elton. The great Rafael Sadiq is with us. Time magazine calls him one of the 100 most influential people in the world. Rafael, we've got callers for you. Let's go to them. Franklin, Tennessee. Lucius is on the line. Hi, Lucius. You're on with Rafael Sadiq.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Well.
Thank you for your variety of shows. I've called on several times, but boy, to have Rafael Sadiq on this morning, I'm peeling back some layers here. I remember Rafael when he came out with Hey Little Walter with Big Head Sinbad in his video, and I thought it was very creative. But Sadiq, Rafael, I tell you, man, in my profession, I tried to bring a lot of genre to the preaching, from Bobby McFerrin to Al Jarreau, even to your music. And I remember one of your songs, it's your anniversary or some of that nature.
Right, anniversary, correct.
And at that time, it came out on cassette.
Right.
And I played it so much, man, until it started screeching. And that's how much I enjoyed that
wow,
that,
thank
tape.
You.
Now I got to find it on CD now.
That's very old school, screeching cassette tape. You take us back, Lucius.
Yeah, now I had to get into CDs. And one of the your variety of background and living near Nashville brings that kind of flavor as far as your variety. But I really love a song called, I think you wrote a song or sung in this song. Matter of fact, I saw it a week ago on YouTube, Lucy Tonight or something like that.
Sorry, Lucy Pearl, Dance Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. And and I know you stole this young lady from En Vogue.
Correct.
And I was with Lucy Pearl, or that was just a group you just put together for that time and just moved on.
It was almost supposed to play like a Traveling Wilburys when you get together with some musicians and you go together and you get together, do a record and go on tour. But we did one tour in Europe and a little bit in the States, and that was sort of the end of that.
It was
keep up the great work, man.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Lucius, let me ask you what we've got you. Does it sound old or new to you, or both?
It sounds like a lot of things, new, old, even the futuristic, sonic, whatever you want to describe as far as adjectives. It's just that Rafael, he's one of those musicians and producers that come along every once in a while. Even when Prince came out, you couldn't staple this guy, Prince and other guys, down just to one genre of music.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think he'll come out with R&B, then he come out with something country, with something bluegrass, with something hip-hop. And I do like you, Rafael, in the R&B kind of mood because of your voice. But to hear you bring out something different, you know, it's like when I'm preaching, I try to bring out something different. And they said, well, we just can't staple them down because I'm thinking about musicians in my head.
Right.
And so that's what I really love about you. And I just say keep up the great work. I hope that you can get back with Tony.
I don't know. Sorry. I see a news report here saying that you, Rafael, say no, not going to happen.
Nah, that's not going to happen. But, you know, we're brothers, you know, so.
Time moves on.
But thank you anyway.
Absolutely. Lucius.
Thank you so much.
Yes, indeed. It is always good to hear from you, Lucius, and thank you for calling. Let's get a little sound here off Stone Roll on the album that came out last year from Rafael Sadiq. Talk about sort of modern vintage all at once. This one's called Radio. Rafael Sadiq's Radio off Stone Rollin' last year. Rolling Stone says, owes a lot to early, gritty, up-tempo tunes, R&B tunes, roots of rock and roll, but also slick and utterly modern. I mean, I listen to this, Rafael, and I'm thinking, you know, Dick Clark passed recently, Don Cornelius not so long ago from Soul Train, Dick Clark, of course, from American Bandstand. I mean, this has got that sound all over it. And right on the cover of Stone Rollin', you've got yourself in that old, you know, very dapper dresser in the old sort of coat and tie, and kids are arrayed on the floor behind you, American Bandstand style. Did you grow up watching? I mean, you were on, I think, Soul Train. Did you watch even back to Dick Clark and Bandstand or not?
Yeah, I saw a lot of Dick Clark. Anything that has some music on and somebody was playing, any show, any movie, any Elvis Presley movie, Beatles in it, any, you know, anything with James Brown coming on, Ed Sullivan on the Jackson 5, I was watching it.
And here, you're still making it, in a way, bringing it back. What do you think about this vein or the veins of music that you carry and push forward? Is it archival? Is it somehow just part of the mainstream? How does this dance with the whole hip hop side of the house?
Well, I think when I'm making music, I don't really think about, you know, I know what's out there and what's going on. Like a lot of people, my friends, and I'm fans of the most current music, but when I get in the room, I like to play in that arena. I like to play dressed up with this music, and this music is a part of me. It is me. It's who I am. So it's not like I'm trying to do something. So sometimes when people call music like this retro mm-hmm. is when somebody's trying something. This is really who I am. You know, I have to try mm-hmm. to do something else when I'm trying to be, you know, if I tried to be like an artist today, I would have to try really hard. But I just feel like I sort of missed that train where I should have probably been born a long time ago.
you've got the look. You could step right on the stage. I wonder what that was like. I think you were on Soul Train a few times. Here's Don Cornelius, died in February, saying with his famous sign-off.
I'm Don Cornelius, and as always in parting, we wish you love, peace, and soul.
You were there. What was that like to be on Soul Train with Don?
Well, that's the better Soul Train you just played.
Mm.
We didn't get that Soul Train.
Okay. What'd you get?
We got a Soul Train that was in like 89 or 90. You know, it wasn't that funky then. You know, Al Green wasn't on that Soul Train.
Right, right. It came along later. Let's go to Nicole in Boston. Hi, Nicole. Thanks for calling. You're on the air with Rafael Sadiq.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty well.
Good. Rafael, I just want to say I am a huge, huge fan of yours.
Thank you.
I went to the D'Angelo Lucy Pearl concert in Boston some years ago. And
right.
By the time D'Angelo got on the stage, I had no voice because I was screaming Raphael the whole time. But as it relates to the comments that Elton John made, I just wanted to clarify. I think there's a difference between the hip-hop that most people hear mainstream on the radio and the artists that you mentioned earlier that you produced, Nas, Tribe Called Quest, and so on. I think that, like, that monotonous hip-hop, whatever it was that he was saying, is not related to those people. I think it's related
That's
to
true.
The stuff that we hear kind of on MTV, VH1. Kind of, you know, the more general stuff, not the stuff that you have to kind of search for these days.
That's true.
Hey, Nicole, good observation, Nicole, and I'm glad you share it with us, and glad you screamed your voice out there for Rafael as well. That sounds like fun. Let's listen to just a little bit here. Rafael Sadiq, Grammy Award winner on the songwriting team for Love of My Life with Erykah Badu, featuring the rapper Common, won the 2003 Grammy Award for Best R&B Song. Here she is singing it.
Love of my life,
you are my friend.
Love of my life,
I can't depend.
Love of my life,
without you, baby, feels like I sampled true love.
Yeah. Thought she didn't clear.
A freak, y'all, and you don't stop. To the beach, y'all, and you don't stop. A freak, freak.
There we are with Love of My Life, Erykah Badu singing it, and Rafael Sadiq on the Grammy Award-winning team that wrote it. Now, what does writing that mean exactly, Rafael? Does it mean everything we're hearing?
Erykah sort of had an idea, and I sort of did the music for it.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote the lyrics, and she wanted flutes on it, and we just kind of did it together, like, the bass, I'm playing bass on it.
Ooh.
And
okay, that's good to know. It sounds great.
Yeah, so I think the bass was the whole track, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, Time Magazine calls you big influencer. That's more than just influence. There's composition and plays the bass. Rafael Sadiq joins us from Burbank, California. Rafael, stand by for just a second. Tim Riley joins us right now. Music critic out of Concord, Massachusetts today, professor of journalism, editor of RileyRockIndex.com, author of Lennon, The Man, The Myth, The Music, The Definitive Life and Fever, How Rock and Roll Transformed Gender in America. Tim Riley, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Time Magazine calls this a towering influencer we've got with us today, Rafael Sadiq. How do you describe that influence over the many years he's been at it now, Tim?
Yeah, well, you can hear all of the influences that you've been talking about, and I love the huge range of music that Sadiq himself is comfortable talking about and obviously has soaked up like a sponge over the years and churns back out. I think that what you're getting at about his being both a retro a sound but also a futuristic sound, I think what's going on there is that, you know, being a bass player, the bottom sound in his music is really quite sophisticated. And when we think about how contemporary he sounds, I think a lot of that has to do with what's going on in the bottom of his music. And I'm talking about the dialogue between the drums or the rhythm track and the bass. And I hear a lot of hip-hop influence in the bottom half of his sound. So it's almost like you have a very contemporary hip-hop bottom track with an elegant Marvin Gaye singer on top. And that makes for a very, very kind of delicious, rich, substantive flavor he's got going on.
What do you say to that, Raphael?
I say he's right, because the bass is sort of the root of it. And it's always the rhythm section, you know, bass and the drums, and the communication between drums and a bass is very important in any type of music. And I think that's the two instruments that made rock and roll great, you know, from groups like the Stones and everything. The bass and the drums is what made everybody dance. So if you sort of have that type of feeling, you can kind of move on the high end parts on the strings and be lush and be, you know, be pretty and be beautiful. But you got to give some people the little sneaky bass and drums. I think he's correct.
Tim, what about the influence that Time says he wields? I mean, where do you hear that out in the world of music today? Is that somehow, did he keep a genre alive or worlds alive for Amy Winehouse to dip into, for Adele to dip into, others, or what, the influence, the imprint?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Adele is definitely listening to Sadiq's records, because you can just hear, I mean, Sadiq, he basically performs a vocal masterclass every time he sings a song. I mean, he's a singer. Hmm. Every single time he sings a song, he is showing off an amazingly flexible and fluid voice with an incredible technique, and also just a tremendous tremendous imagination about the ins and outs of how a melody can go and how it can be played with. And so, I also want to say that I think that, you know, when we talk about Sadiq and his influence on all of these other artists we're talking about, you know, black music has never been one thing, right? So we think about the popular style of black music now. Yes, you would say it would be rap and it would be hip-hop, but R&B actually dominated the charts in the 90s and in the aughts. And there is still tremendous variety going on in all different kinds of patches of the music world. And hip-hop is simply, you know, one of the more popular ones. But there has always been a tremendous R&B strain moving through the music and influencing hip-hop. And, you know, the hip-hoppers are listening to that R&B. And the R&B people, like Sadiq, they're listening to hip-hop. They're getting ideas off of hip-hop.
The idea that
rap is the only kind of black music alive and well today is really just a myth.
Absolutely. What about the future part of this? Where do you see Raphael pointing then, Tim? Looking forward, where's this go?
Well, I think, you know, like most critics, I've just been waiting for, you know, the big breakout moment. He's had a very steady growing career. He's had a Grammy. He works with all these great artists. Every critic knows his name. All that has to happen is he just needs to get booked on American Idol, and he'll just go into the stratosphere.
I don't know. Maybe he'll be the judge. Maybe he'll be the judge. Tim Riley, author of Lennon and Fever. Tim, so great to have you with us. Thanks so much for joining
Tim.
Us.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Raphael.
Thanks, Tim.
Raphael, what do you make of that string of analysis of what you're up to, where you are?
He's correct. I mean, we always say, you know, you have all the accolades, and I work consistently for the last, you know, whatever, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
But the last 4 years, I mean, I've been touring a lot, you know, with the way I see it, and stone rolling. And we always say, okay, you're one hit away. This next record is a very crucial, very important record for me with everything. And, you know, we worked really hard, my management and my team, and, you know, everybody's pushing forward right now. Yeah. So I think, you know, we're about a beat away.
Time Magazine says you're already swinging a great big stick in the music world, and we can hear it. Raphael Sadiq, please stand by there in Burbank. It is so great to have you. We'll go out with Stone Rollin', title track off the album that came out last year. And listeners, you can join us. What's the spin, the new way you hear Raphael Sadiq bringing to vintage, bringing to the world? 800-423-8255. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the great singer, songwriter, Grammy Award-winning producer, multi-instrumentalist Raphael Sadiq, who draws deeply on the past and pushes it right into the future. No, that's not him right behind us. Of course, that's Mick Jagger. But if you saw the Grammys in that year, last year, it was Mick and Raphael Sadiq on stage with a nod to Solomon Burke and Everybody Needs Somebody to Love at the 53rd Annual Grammy Awards in 2011. Mick Jagger right next to a very dapper and world-influencing Time Magazine now says, Raphael Sadiq with Everybody Needs Somebody to Love. You can join us this hour. What do you hear in Raphael Sadiq? Is this the new pop, the musical time travel you've been looking for? Can you hear the future as well as the past in the music of Raphael Sadiq? And what's your word, your question for Raphael? He's with us today from Burbank, California. Raphael, let's go straight to our listeners, Brian in Marion, South Carolina. Brian, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much. I appreciate hearing about this artist. Raphael, I have to admit to being just old enough that Tom is actually introducing me to your work. I have somehow been under my own rock all these years and missed out, and you have a new fan.
Oh, great. It's great.
What I'm hearing, though, back from my own days on air on the radio over a decade ago playing jazz pieces, first I'm hearing Mose Allison all over these new recordings, and I just love Mose Allison stuff. But the thought that also is going through my mind is what would the world have been like if those great performers of the 50s and 60s and early 70s had the kind of studio that you must have to do what you do.
Right.
Thanks for carrying it all forward and taking it into the new century in technology.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, talk to us about your studio and how you lay it down. I mean, you do a lot of tracks on your own albums, right?
Yeah, well, to give credit to the artists before me, mm-hmm. I'm really trying to make my studio as close to theirs as possible and not make it too modern. You need some modern things in the studio now, but for the most part, musicians in that day, what they would do, they would bring their sound from home, and it was the engineer's job to keep the sound that they made at home and make that mm-hmm. and bring that to tape. And so I try to just bring the sound that, you know, that comes out of my fingers and other musicians and, you know, drummers and keep that sound that we had before it goes to tape or, you know, digitally. Mm-hmm. And that's what my studio is basically made of. It's a lot of old gear, some new gear, and it's a lot of great wood on the walls, and it keeps the sound. And it's all those things. Everything plays a part. You know?
I know it's a popular spot for people to hang out and make music.
Yeah, it is.
You are famously very multi-instrumentalist. I mean, tell us just how many tracks you're producing yourself on some of the tracks on your latest albums. I mean, you've got much more than one instrument in your hands there.
Yeah, well, most of my records, the way I see it, I play drums and bass and guitar and keyboards on the whole album. And the second album, most albums I play the whole rhythm section unless I call in some of the guys in my band, which are really great musicians, you know, Calvin and is the bass player, and Lamar is my drummer. And I call those guys in sometime, and Charles, my keyboard player. Mm-hmm. And I try to, if I have a traveling band, sometime I call them in for like maybe two or three songs, because the way I write, sometimes I'm just there by myself, and I want to hear it so bad that I'll just end up playing everything, and by the time everybody get there, it's done.
Let's go to a track where you called in one Mr. Stevie Wonder. This is Never Give It Up from The Way I See It, Raphael Sadiq's 2008 album.
See, she's so sexy, the way she talks, the way she walks, it really drives me crazy. I think I like the girl.
Never Give It Up, Never Give You Up from The Way I See It. Now, we're going to come to Stevie Wonder in a minute here. I know he was a big influence on you. I mean, do you listen back now, or does all this just live in your memory, Raphael? Do you play old videos and old tapes to bring it back?
No, man. Just up there. It's there. It's there, man. I remember taking, like, the 45 off the back of the cereal boxes of the Jackson 5. So... It's there. I don't really have to go back and listen to it, but I always listen to a lot of Stevie Wonder and a lot of older music and a lot of new music. But Stevie Wonder is an imprint in my head. He's a really good friend of mine. His birthday is like a day before mine, and we talk a lot, and he mentors me a lot. And just to think, you know, Stevie Wonder is my friend just really blows me away.
It's pretty nice. People have talked about your voice as a kind of young Stevie Wonder sounding voice. I mean, you're not a kid anymore. You're 45 or something now, but you still got that kind of youthful Stevie Wonder quality in your voice. Is that deliberate from way back, sort of patterning on Stevie?
No, well, after Stevie Wonder sang and people like, you know, Donny Hathaway and a lot of great vocalists, I didn't think anybody else should try to sing after that. So I used to just hum Stevie songs and not know the words. So I think his melodies were so strong that they stayed in my head. And when I sing, I know I could never be Stevie Wonder. I could never sing like a Stevie. But in my mind, I think I probably thought I was singing like Stevie, but wasn't. So I kind of created this sound of my own, really. But I do hear people say I sound like younger Stevie, but, you know, but Stevie went from A to Z with his level of singing, and I just keep my singing right in the middle.
We've got here Never Give You Up from Raphael Sadiq's 2008 album, The Way I See It. He says Stevie Wonder was a big influence on his music, Inner Visions, his favorite album. We're going to hear a little harmonica solo coming up just around now from Stevie Wonder. Let's listen. I think he'll introduce it.
I'd like to invite Mr. Stevie Wonder to my album. Come on, Stevie.
There is straight up Stevie Wonder on harmonica coming into Raphael Sadiq's utterly modern world, as Rolling Stone calls it. He joins us today from Burbank, California. Jim is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Jim, you're on the air with Raphael Sadiq.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
In the introduction of Raphael's to Stevie Wonder, I heard a little Archie Bell from it.
Cool. Archie Bell and the Drells.
Yeah.
Archie Bell and the Drells from Houston, Texas. The reason for my call, a lot of us here in Nashville, I think, who are even remotely associated with the music business are disturbed by how the mainstream industry refuses to recognize or promote anybody other than mainstream pigeonhole type entertainers or acts. And I'm just wondering what Raphael thinks, what you think, and maybe what anybody else out there who might want to weigh in might think about the potential influence of the recognition of a guy with some diversity like Raphael might have on the mainstream industry once they had some commercial success.
Yeah, well, I kind of think it's really hard for musicians like myself. I always tell friends of mine who sort of play the music that I play, I tell them that the road that I'm on is not an easy road, so you have to be careful and really make a decision, conscious decision, if you really want to go down a road like mine, because you really have to love music, because everyone's not going to let you in, and because it's hard. They feel it's a hard sell, but, you know, I've always said in this time, in this era of music and with the way radio is and the way labels are, you have to get with a good label. And my label, Columbia, has been really good because they have a real big musical background with musicians, and you just have to really be strong and really love music, because you're going to have to take a lot of hits where you're not going to get seen or get the notoriety, but you have to really love what you do for it to get through, you know, the hard part. And, you know, the industry, it's just what it is. You know, you just have to love it without the industry, because they're not really going to, like, acknowledge you, because there's too many things. I guess it's almost like a car wash. You know, it's like a car wash. You pull your car up and you just take your car through the automatic car wash.
Yeah.
And labels know what that is at the end. And they don't want to take that chance of washing that car that doesn't need to go through the automatic.
They want it on automatic. What is that like? I mean, to Jim's point, he and many others in Nashville writing and all around the country, you know, everybody would like those huge hits. On the other hand, there's a lot you don't want to surrender about your own artistry, and when you sit down to create, are those things on your mind, or do you just not let yourself go there? Do you not let yourself think, how can I hit that mainstream jet stream?
I mean, I made records when I was like, you know, from the way I see it, I'm starting around 42 years old. Mm-hmm. And in the business, when you're 42, you're trying to do everything everybody's doing on the radio. So I took all the risk, and because I love what I do. When I make music, I have to make music that makes me happy, and hopefully there's a huge audience out there somewhere that's waiting for it. It's not accessible to everybody in the beginning, but you just have to put it out there and hope that the audience finds me. And NPR has been like a huge part of my career of making the people aware of who I am and what I do. And from there, I just sort of kept pressing on, like, okay, when I'm in the studio, I pick up a guitar, pick up a keyboard, and I go, this is what I want to play, and this is how I want to feel. If this gets to radio, maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I think the target is now is to be on the road, be on TV. And even if you don't get the big TV shows, is to get out and play. People want to come out and hear you play, and that's the best thing you can do as a musician, is be in front of people.
Glad to help make it happen. Let's listen to off Stone Roland from last year. This is his track called The Answer, kind of a social conscience in the message here. Maybe you hear a little Marvin Gaye going on, but it's Rafael Sadiq.
Stop saying the game is sold and I be told.
Try
to help the child that's only 4 years old. Why would you sit back and relax and watch them kids fall off the tracks?
Don't just sit back and watch the kids fall off the track. Rafael Sadiq singing there. Will in Boston. Will, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Rafael.
Hi, Tom. It's my pleasure. I'm a singer-songwriter myself, and coming from a kind of rock background and folk background, but I got turned on to Rafael a couple years ago, so I'm at the Paradise Rock Club here in Boston. And I'm one of those people now, whenever he puts out something, I'm there if the day comes out buying it. And what I loved and what I love about him is that, especially on this last, on Stone Rolling, he takes things like the Mellotron, which, you know, is on Sgt. Pepper's, and it's transformed almost into a lead instrument and doing all the counter melodies to the vocal, which just blew my mind the second I heard it, you know. And I was wondering how conscious it was to take the Mellotron and feature it on a couple tracks you did on that record, to do it that way. And are there other instruments that you're visiting that way? Because it's so refreshing, and I'm just so glad, like, that sound and instrument is visiting people's ears, and it inspires me as a, you know, composer as well.
Yeah, it's just one of the instruments that I've enjoyed on, of course, the Beatles records, and, you know, when Prince sort of tried to copy it from the Beatles, and on Paisley, in some of the Paisley work that he did, maybe on the Parade album, I think it was the Parade album. But I've always liked that instrument. I've always felt like it could be in some rock sounding blues oriented type of music. And I mean, it's in my studio. It sits there just like it's always going to be a part of something. But also wanted to add, like, you know, clarinets, you know, the way they did in the 50s to some new music that I'm doing now, but still make it up energy type of song, because I love clarinets. And the Mellotron is just a beautiful instrument. If you use it, I knew I would use it differently than anybody else, because, I mean, I had to, the way, you know, for the songs that I were playing.
Will, thanks so much for your call. You know, Rafael, listening to The Answer there, and it really is it kind of a call, and I'm hearing Marvin Gaye there. I don't know what you hear, but saying, look, I mean, you write there about growing up in a tough neighborhood, in a dark, pretty city. You say, it was scary, but life was good. See, in my neighborhood. And it's a real counterpoint on Stone Rolling there to the sort of, you know, gritty sound of a lot of the other songs and more upbeat sound. You had some tough stuff in your childhood. 4 siblings in pretty rough ways, dying when you were a young man. Is that part of what brings that bottom Tim Riley was calling about to your sound? There's a sense of depth in it, even when you're going in all kinds of up directions.
Yeah, you know, growing up like that, I lost my earlier brother to a murder when I was 7, and One of my brothers died. He OD'd when I was maybe 20-something years old. And my other brother, he committed suicide, we think, because of drugs. He couldn't get off the drug. He was so embarrassed about it and hated it. And my really close sister who sang blues, who was like one of the best singers, who graduated from Cal State Hayward, was in a bad car accident, and she passed away when I was actually wrote that song in Never Rains in Southern California, right in the middle of my session.
Wow.
So I think I had to be, even though it's a lot of kids in our family, at that point I had to become like the older brother when I was such the baby boy, didn't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had to become a man at that point and just like take over. And I think the music always was my getaway. You know, it was always my getaway. And so when I write songs like The Answer, I just want to just tell people, you know, just to, you know, look out for people, and that without being too preachy. But, you know, if kids out there, you gotta tell them, you know, what's going on and, you know, how to be protected from the world a little bit.
Well, we're glad for your influence on that big world. Raphael, it's great to have you. Tell us about that next album. You talked about working on it. When's it coming out?
That next album should come out in 13. Should be a single out at the end of the year, maybe. I've been on tour, like I said, for almost the last 2 years straight. I'm back home. I just got back from performing at the Time 100 last night.
Yeah.
A couple days ago.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
I'm back now, and you know, I get to go in the studio, run around, look at everything, grab some guitars.
That is great.
Thinking about what's next?
Raphael Sadiq, Living Large, Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential. Raphael, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you
today.
So much, Tom.
We go out with Good Man off the Stone Roland album from last year. And Raphael Sadiq. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.